podcast today, you are going to hear me come to the realization that we need some of our OTs with the biggest hearts and the brightest minds to be considering specialization in burn therapy. But whether or not you end up specializing in this practice area, I'm so glad that you are here today. Because no matter what setting you work in, you will likely have a burn patient on your caseload at some point. Burns are the fourth most common type of trauma worldwide, with 90% of burns occurring in low to middle income countries. And while OTs have worked in burn units for decades, the research behind the OT-specific contributions to burn care is still in its infancy. So today, we are going to look at some early stage research out of Iran on occupational therapy for hand burns. And this is going to jumpstart our conversation on occupational therapy for burns. And joining me on the podcast will be Jody Sable, OTRL, who is a burn rehab clinical specialist. So let's dive in. Welcome to the OT Potential Podcast, where we review new and influential OT journal articles, then invite on an expert guest to help us pull out actionable takeaways that you can implement in your practice starting today. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Lyon, OTRL. And before we dive into this topic of burn therapy, I wanted to let you know that this podcast may qualify as continuing education for you. To earn CEU credit, you will need to be a member of the OT Potential Club, our OT evidence-based practice platform. To earn CEU credit, all you do is sign into the club, take a 5-question test, and we will generate a certificate if you pass that test. So thinking about the fact that this could be a continuing education course, I wanted to state our 2 learning objectives so you can be thinking about them throughout the podcast today. Our first learning objective is that you will be able to identify common interventions used by OTs for hand burn patients. And our second learning objective is that you will be able to recognize some common functional assessment measures used by OTs for hand burn patients. So let's begin by looking at our journal article, and then I will patch Jody into this call. So the article that we are looking at today is called Effectiveness of Incorporating Occupational Therapy in the Rehabilitation of Hand Burn Patients. It comes to us from the Annals of Burn and Fire Disasters, and it was published in 2019. So the article begins with a general introduction to hand burns. The article shares that our hands are one of the most vulnerable parts of our body when it comes to burns. Even though each hand makes up less than 3% of our body surface, more than 80% of severe burn cases involve the hands. Hand injury also has a disproportionately large impact on our daily activities. One study showed that losing hand function compromises 54% of total functionality. So it makes sense when we're thinking about hand burn rehab that it is important to have a comprehensive treatment plan for even minor hand burns, as the consequences of hand injury are wide-ranging. These consequences include functional, social, psychological, and cosmetic considerations. Early intervention therapy is of the utmost importance for burn care. Passive motion, focused treatment, and surgical repair / skin grafts can also contribute to the overall healing process. Hand rehab requires cooperation by an interdisciplinary team, and the article specifically mentions surgeons, OTs, PTs, and psychologists. The authors say that the involvement of each team member should begin the day the patient is admitted to the hospital. So from here, the article gives a little blurb on the role of OT and PT in hand burn rehab. The article states that the role of OT and PT in a hand burn center can include prescribing splints and using compressive therapies for healing, as well as preventing deformity. The role can also include providing assistive devices, developing therapeutic activities to increase flexibility and reduce tension in the skin, maintaining range of motion and muscle strength, and increasing overall functionality. Looking at the role of OT, the authors say that the unique role of OT in this setting is helping each patient return to function in their professional, social, and leisure life. With this focus, it makes sense that OT intervention may help patients reach their optimal functional outcomes. OTs can also reduce the risk of hand contracture, which has the potential to affect this population at a high rate. But all that being said, the specific contribution of OT to burn care teams has been understudied overall in the research, which leads us to this current paper. So why was this specific article written? The authors state that the purpose of this study was to investigate the effectiveness of occupational therapy in improving hand functionality for burn patients. For their methods, this was a proof of concept study, which is one of the earliest stages of research. This type of study is typically done to investigate feasibility and kind of the initial promise of a treatment. So who participated? 30 patients with a second or third degree burn participated in this study. These patients had undergone an early excision with STSG, or conservative management with dressings. With this treatment, their dressed superficial wounds healed after 5 to 10 days, and grafted wounds healed in 5 days. Patients underwent physiotherapy during their initial treatment, and then 12 days after their wounds healed, the patients began an occupational therapy program. And this program took place 3 times per week over 8 weeks. Sessions lasted 1 to 1.5 hours, and patients ended up receiving 24 to 36 hours of therapy in total. Interventions included, but were not limited to, edema reduction strategies, which included ACE bandages, elevation exercise, and reversible massage. It also included positioning and splinting if necessary, range of motion exercises, active resistive exercises, stretching exercises, and practicing activities of daily living using the injured hand, such as using a spoon, getting dressed, writing, opening and closing bottles, and using zippers and buttons. And what outcome measures were used? The therapists tracked their outcomes using the DASH, which many OTs are familiar with. This is the Disabilities of the Arm, Shoulder, and Hand Questionnaire, which was given before the start of therapy and at the end of the 8 weeks. And in the results section, they shared that the average DASH score before occupational therapy was 60.9, and the average score after was 33.9. This is a decrease in 27 points, which is a good thing because the lower the score, the better on this questionnaire. The authors say that this indicates that before OT, the patients had a lot of difficulty performing activities of daily living, but after the intervention, they face fewer challenges with ADLs. In their discussion, the authors share that these results mirror those of some other early stage studies, indicating that OT is effective in the rehabilitation of hand burn patients. One of the other studies that they cited that had a similar outcome was called Functional Outcomes of Burn Patients with or Without Rehabilitation in Mainland China. I'll link to that in the club, but you could also go find it if you are interested in reading a similar article. But ending with the limitations, we are just clearly in the early stage of exploring OT's unique contribution to managing burns. And this study was definitely limited by first the relatively low number of participants, and probably most importantly, the absence of a comparison group. Without the comparison group, it's hard to gauge what degree of improvement was from the OT and what was attributed to the natural healing process. So I think that's why it's important to take into account some of the other secondary studies that they mentioned. But overall, this study just gives us a little taste of what OT for hand burns can look like. But to really dive in and flesh that out a little bit more, I am so thrilled to welcome Jody to the podcast. Jody graduated with a master's degree in occupational therapy from New York University in 2007. Her clinical experience started at Bellevue Hospital, a level 1 trauma center and safety net hospital in the heart of New York City, where her passion for trauma care and serving the underserved population was born. She gained foundational knowledge working in both inpatient rehabilitation and hospital-based outpatient hand therapy. She worked briefly in home health and skilled nursing facilities as a travel therapist before settling in Seattle and returning to her roots in trauma-based care. For the past 10 years, she has worked in acute care at Harborview Medical Center in Seattle, eventually finding a home in burn care in 2017. Since then, she has specialized solely in burns and is now the clinical specialist for the acute and outpatient burn therapy group. She also serves as the co-chair of the OTPT Special Interest Group Committee for the American Burn Association and is working towards her burn therapy certification. Jody has a passion for wound care, splinting, casting, and compassion-driven care, and loves the lasting relationships that develop when working with burn survivors. So without further ado, I will patch Jody into this podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Jody. It's great to have you.
Hi, Sarah. It's great to be here.
I am so thankful to have you here to discuss this, what feels like a really complex topic, but also a topic that OTs are so well positioned to work in. But before we dive into it, I really want to get to know you just a little bit better and hear your story and start with how you first found OT.
Yeah, so I think I, like many people, I did not know what occupational therapy was when I was in college majoring in psychology and kind of at a loss of what the, you know, the next step is after having a degree in psychology. And I took a summer job looking for something a little bit more meaningful than waiting tables. And in the state of Arizona, they offered respite services for families with children with autism. And it was kind of through a program where the provider had some got some training through like ABA training. So that sounded interesting to me. And through that process, I learned about occupational therapy. And the young child that I was working with, her mom, I think, saw something in me and said, "You are an occupational therapist." And wow. It was really intense because I was really lost. You know, I didn't know what, you know, my next step was. And I think I had called my mom regularly and told her that I was, you know, I had all these different ideas about next steps for college. And when OT came up, I remember talking to my mom, and it was the first time that I heard her be like, that sounds good. But I didn't really see myself in pediatrics and specifically in, you know, children on the, working with kids on the spectrum. But I learned through exploring more that OTs work in hospitals, and I observed a hand therapist, and that was like for sure my like aha moment of this is absolutely what I want to do. And, you know, I saw a patient come in, they had hand trauma and couldn't move. The therapist did these modalities, and you saw this like instant improvement by the end of an hour session. And that was super gratifying to see, you know, the therapist provide a treatment and see an instant change and impact on the patient. And so that kind of started my career and went to school and ended up working in hands for a little bit and found my way to burns.
Wow, that's just an amazing story, and that someone saw that in you and called that out, especially a parent to have this idea of what OT is and to see that in other people. I think the more I talk to OTs, I'm like, there is a specific way of thinking and being in the world that OTs tend to possess. And I think it's a good reminder to us to, when we see that in especially high schoolers, college age, to nudge in that way, because that is so powerful. You're my 40th interview, and you're the first person to say that. And that correlates with my story too, where someone in college, as I was working in the summer, said that they thought that I should be an OT. And that was the first time I had ever thought in that way.
Did you know what OT was at the time?
I knew what it was, but it was very impactful to be not called out, but identified
in that way too.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's so interesting. You and I are both NYU grads and have these common story points along our way. So
yeah, that's great.
So that's how you found OT. Can you tell me a little bit about how you then entered into the world of burn care?
Yeah. So in a way, I kind of stumbled upon it. Interestingly, my very first exposure to burns was not a positive one. And I think many people listening to this may also have that experience where it's overwhelming or scary. And so I was not a student. This is when I was observing, trying to figure out if OT was the right place for me. And I observed a therapist treating a burn patient in the ICU. And I had no context of, I'd never been in an ICU before. So it was very overwhelming and scary. And I kind of had never turned back and thought about burns as an option. And my career trajectory, I was working at a hospital in New York City. I was working at Bellevue. And I had found a love of trauma, like that was, or treating trauma survivors, and particularly in the outpatient hand clinic. And so I, for the longest time, thought I wanted to be a certified hand therapist. I loved splinting, wound care, treating patients, that kind of the psychological impact of trauma. And so When I left New York, I found my way to Seattle, and I knew that I wanted to work at the trauma hospital and kind of go back to my roots. And I started on the acute care at Harborview. I started working as an acute care therapist and thinking that I would move and transition into outpatient hands. And I never transitioned. 5 years later, I was still working in acute care, but I don't think I was really satisfied with the work that I was doing. And fortunately, my management recognized that. And there was an opportunity on our burn unit for almost like a skills enhancement. We had somebody who was going out on maternity leave and they needed coverage. And so it was just an opportunity to gain more skills and expand a little bit. And I was blown away. I spent 6 months on burns, and it was everything that I love about our profession for me wrapped up into a perfect package. It has the wound care that I loved of outpatient splinting. We do tons of splinting. You have long, long relationships with patients, like almost like an inpatient rehab kind of like stay, if not longer, because we see patients throughout a long continuum of care. You have the mental health aspect. There's manual therapy, hands-on. And then it's also just this really incredible team approach that I love. So it's a very unique system. And once I got a taste of that, I was hooked and really wanted to, and knew that that was kind of where I dropped the idea of becoming a certified hand therapist, although it's still in the back of my mind that maybe I'll get to that. Because <Yeah. laughs> the two really do work well together. But yeah, so I've now been on burns for 5 to 6 years.
Wow. Yeah, as I was reading some of the supplementary reading and like the overview of burn rehab, I was reading that and I was like, this is almost what I feel like my OT schooling prepared me to do. Like, just like you said, it's everything that we learned kind of all bundled into one. And I'm wishing that we had better pathways into burns, kind of like you took this roundabout path, but I'm like, it's such a huge need area, especially when you're thinking about the global stage. And I know for myself, like when I was in T school, I kind of crossed that off my list early, and I don't even know why. I've been reflecting on that this week, but I'm thankful that you were able to find it, even though it was kind of a roundabout way for sure.
Yeah. I think that burns they can be intimidating. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that comes around being comfortable with patients who are in pain, which is a really, really challenging thing to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are absolutely therapists who can come into it as new grads and be exposed and gain that confidence. And certainly many of our therapists at Harborview came in specifically for burns and knowing that's what they wanted. But I think they also maybe had an internship or something that exposed them to it in a positive light that they were able to then see their passion for it. But in thinking about why burns are so challenging or scary for providers, I think it comes from a place of being okay with somebody in pain. It's not that I'm okay with somebody being in pain, but I also recognize that being able to coach somebody through that in a way so that they can have a positive outcome. Because if you don't intervene, the outcome is significantly worse. And that's kind of, I think, where my head is when I am sitting with somebody, with a patient who's in pain, and I can hold them in a space of compassion but also kind of be their cheerleader to like coach mm-hmm. them through that process.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can see your work in like a trauma center being such a good first stepping point to be exposed to that, and seeing burns does seem like there's unique opportunities to help in so many ways, in such really specific ways as an OT. Yeah, I definitely see the benefit of the pathway that you took to get there. So you found burns, and where are you at today? Just a quick overview of what your work looks like.
So I am the clinical specialist for the acute and outpatient burn therapy group at the University of Washington Burn Center at Harborview. It's a mouthful. Yeah. So Harborview is a 400 plus, I say plus because we are never just 400 beds, we are over capacity. And we are the only designated level one adult and pediatric trauma center and verified burn center in the state of Washington. And we serve as a regional trauma center and burn referral for 5 states. So we also service Montana, Wyoming, Alaska, and Idaho. So large catchment area. And then Harborview is also the safety net hospital for the Seattle metro region. And it's our mission to provide healthcare to the most vulnerable populations. So the other thing is that we're also a teaching hospital. So our burn center has an amazing multidisciplinary system of our medical team that has attendings, fellows, and residents that rotate through, as well as nurse practitioners and physician assistants. We have our nursing team, rehab psychologists, nurse nutrition, pharmacy, social work and continuity of care providers, and child life specialists, as well as our therapists. And so large group of people that we kind of all work together on this incredible multidisciplinary team. So I work predominantly in outpatient now, but also sometimes float into the hospital to help out as needed. And we treat patients as young as days old to patients well into their 90s. So there's no age limit to patients who have burns. We work 7 days a week. We have somebody who's staffed in the hospital 7 days a week. And then in clinic, I'm kind of on, so 5 days a week, I'm in clinic. For half days, I'm more or less a consultant for the provider-run clinic. So patients come in who obviously have more minor burns that don't require hospitalization, or they have recently been discharged from the hospital and are coming back for follow-up care. And so I'm kind of running in and out of rooms as a consultant to kind of provide therapy in those short settings, the short little visits, or 2 days a week, I have my own clinic where patients are coming in and I'm seeing and doing more extended, longer treatments. And so we additionally provide some telemedicine visits for patients who are in the state of Washington. And then I think one other kind of area in the hospital that we work or provide services that's a little unique is that the therapist in the hospital, we will go down to the operating room and provide services there. And some great opportunity for us to be able to do range of motion while the patient is under anesthesia, be able to see what's contracting. And, you know, if the patient's range of motion that they're showing when they're awake is strikingly different than when they're asleep because of, you know, guarding and pain. And it's a way to, we're able to splint a patient. Sometimes it's easier to get the position, the desired position that we need when they're under anesthesia. And then we'll also do some positioning of the patient in the OR and post-operative planning and positioning for graft protection and all of that. So,
wow. I'm just hearing that and I'm like, wow, I feel so lucky and happy that I found you to talk to, because it sounds like because of the setting that you've worked in, you've gotten to experience so many different aspects of burn care, even in the 5 years that you've been working in it. And turning to the article too, I'm syncing together that probably this hospital system in Iran where the study was done, it's probably similar to where you work, like at the trauma center for the region, and they're providing that in-house support and then providing the outpatient care as well. So yeah, so turning to the article, I guess I was just curious to hear what your initial impressions of it were as you read it.
So I think it's wonderful to have that there's literature or data out there that is promoting and supporting occupational therapy as a whole, as a practice. I think that's wonderful. I think there are some key things that I'm curious to know more about the study. One of the things that I thought was interesting is that they talk about how early intervention is key. Mm-hmm. But then they're not treating the patients until, or this, you know, small, it's a small group of patients that they're treating. And the parameters were that they didn't treat them until 12 days after they had received, I think therapy was not involved until after 12 days.
Yeah.
And there were two different groups that were interesting to me, that there was either patients who received a skin graft or those that didn't. And those that didn't, it was healed within 5 to 10 days, which to me, that says that the risk of limitations is very low. And the patients that were not grafted that healed within 5 to 10 days, I would expect them to have a full recovery, honestly, with or without intervention, potentially. Mm-hmm. Like the risk of scarring is much lower.
It's low.
But yeah, so that was the piece that was interesting, and obviously more, a larger patient population and a larger sample would be ideal. But I thought it was also interesting that the DASH scores weren't impacted by the size of the burn. So if a patient had a 20% total burn surface area that involved other areas like the upper arm or the face, that their DASH scores were no different than somebody who just had a smaller burn, which I thought was also interesting. And then I think the other piece to this is that their treatments were after, it was up until 10 weeks, I believe. And so with burns maturing, right, you're still maturing over the course of a year. And so I would love to see this a year out, right? So extend the study longer and get those DASH scores a year later. And was it super impactful to have that bulk of the therapy in the beginning versus do we spread it out over time? Because, you know, you still need those check-ins as the scar is maturing and as you're seeing the scar shape and change. So those are kind of my takeaway from it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love all those. And I want to dig into each one of them. I guess to start with the DASH score, something I was curious about there too, as I read that, where, like you said, it was the same depending on the size of the burn. And to me, I wondered if that spoke to the primacy of the hand, like if the hand's involved at all, whether it's just on your hand or like extends up your arm, just so much of our function is contained in our hand. Do you get where I'm going with that? Like,
yeah, absolutely. And I think the hand is so important, whether it's your dominant hand or your non-dominant hand. And if I'm honest, as a therapist, when a patient burns their dominant hand, I am relieved because I know that that patient is going to be more motivated and more inclined to use their dominant hand. And that is going to improve their outcome. But yes, hands in general, that's our function. Without it, everything is more challenging. But the more I find with patients with larger TBSAs, they struggle because there's so much to keep up with, right? You're stretching something, and if you're focusing on one thing, the other thing contracts, and we talk about the marathon of burn recovery, and it really is this, like, there's a lot of persistence, and when you're having to focus on multiple different joints, that becomes challenging. And so I would think that patients, I was happy to hear that the TBSA did not impact the DASH scores. There wasn't really a big difference. So, and maybe that's a testament to the therapist.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing you drew out there about the article where in the introduction talks so much about the importance of early intervention, like all the team members need to be in there as soon as possible. But there was a gap in what was shared between what was happening there and then getting to outpatient. And that was something I was hoping you could kind of fill in for us, not for what happened in this hospital in Iran, but for your own hospital, just what that continuum of care looks like for OTs. I know that's kind of a big question, but to give us an overview of what that looks like.
Sure. So depending on the setting, it looks a little different. So maybe if it's helpful, I can kind of talk you through the two different settings for like a patient with an inpatient setting versus the outpatient world. So when a patient comes into our hospital, the therapist is assigned to them. For our burn center, we don't delineate between an OT or a PT. So we are burn therapists, and you have a burn therapist assigned to you. In some instances with much larger burns, we will kind of parse out our standard OT-PT roles. But for the sake of just a hand burn, a therapist is assigned to the patient. And then we'll do our assessment. We provide treatment kind of throughout their hospital stay. Our goal as a therapist in the hospital is in the acute phase is to reduce the swelling, teach the patient to kind of start actively moving and using their hand. I think for this scenario, I'm just going to focus on a standard hand burn, a hand patient. And then if a patient is going to require grafting, we will then look at planning for post-op positioning, splinting. A lot of times, you know, we don't initially splint the patients because the significant swelling is kind of self-splinting. And we want to get that edema out initially, and then we'll look at the splinting and positioning of the patient. And the patients are seen anywhere from, I'd say a hand patient's probably seen daily because our goal is to get them out the door as soon as possible. The therapist will, as I mentioned before, go down into the OR to stretch the patients, fabricate splints either in the OR or awake, and then really work on getting them to use their hands. So we may initially give an adaptive device, but we want to take that adaptive device away as soon as possible. And that's something that was, I think, really a really unique mind shift for me as an OT, and like kind of that rehab brain of, no, I'm going to give them the thing to compensate so that they can get out the door faster and move on to their next care. But with burns, if you give somebody a cylindrical foam built up handle, that limits how much they're bending their fingers, and I want them to make a full fist. And so if I give them that tool, they're limiting themselves. And so you can watch a patient struggle for a little bit or have them do a little stretch beforehand, and then they can then grasp the spoon and go about their ADL and get the most benefit of it. So we also, in the inpatient setting, if a patient is grafted with a sheet graft, the therapist also does some of the wound care associated with that. So we will trim graft edges, apply dressings, and really looking at the functional dressings and making sure we kind of share that role with nursing. But because it's a teaching hospital and because you have different staff coming through, we want to make sure that, as we mentioned before, the hand is so important for function. So if you wrap up that hand and your thumb is not completely abducted when you're doing the wrapping, or you have a really bulky dressing, then you're not able to move, that's not good. So we work on teaching and or doing, helping with the dressing changes to ensure that patients are able to move freely and use their hands. And then kind of the three things that keep patients in the hospital for us are, they have to be able to do their wound care or have somebody do wound care for them. They have to be able to do that on pain medication that they can go home on. So obviously they can't have IV pain meds. And then the therapist has to clear them. So we play a vital role in making sure, like, the team looks to us to say, is the patient okay to go home? And, you know, we work on, because stretching needs to happen, we say every hour that the patient is awake, some form of stretching needs to be happening. We really teach our patients to be their own therapists. So very rarely are we sending our patients out to a hand therapist or a therapist in the community, because we're kind of giving them the tools to do the therapy in the interim between their clinic visits. So even though we're a large catchment area, when our patients leave the hospital, they come back and we kind of see them. So they'll leave, and typically within 7 to 10 days, they come back to the hospital. They get assessed, and that's where I will follow up and see them in the clinic. And then depending on how the patient is doing, if the patient has full range of motion, then we can kind of parse out and we'll have them come back, you know, 2 weeks to a month later. And then we're kind of, you know, the length of time between visits gets larger if a patient has good wound healing and good function and good range of motion and has a good, a sound understanding of their program. Those that don't, that need a little bit more nurturing, we kind of filter in and kind of can see, and then we treat them more frequently. Or if somebody who's far away in Montana and I'm recognizing that they need a little bit more help, I will then refer to an outpatient provider and kind of do a handoff and make sure that the provider is comfortable with burn care and treating scars. Hmm.
Yeah, that role in OT across the continuum of care is so remarkable in burn care, how you get to follow patients for so long and in your particular setting, how they stay connected to that burn center. Makes a lot of sense because there's so much specialized care that happens. That gives me just like a big picture orientation to what's happening there. I wanted to zoom in a little bit now on your specific work. And I know there's so much that's happening in your mind as you're seeing patients, you're building on so much experience. But as you walk into eval a patient for the first time, what are some of the things that are top of mind for you? What are you looking for?
Sure. So I think our observation skills are huge. And so I see that patient when they walk in the door, before they're even in the clinic room. I have seen that in their waiting room. I get so much information just peeking in and seeing the patient there. So one is, how is their dressing? Are they mummied up? Is their hand wrapped up with big bulky dressing? That tells me that the patient is not using their hand. Are they holding it in a guarded position, right? Is it close to the chest with the elbow flexed? And so that's kind of the first thing that gives me an insight of what I'm walking into. I will often do a chart review, and we use burn pictures. So sometimes I have, you know, if it's a brand new patient that we've never seen in our hospital system, I don't have that. But oftentimes patients will have come through our ER, and maybe they don't need hospital admission, but they'll refer to the clinic. And so they've kind of got pictures there. So I can look at the picture and get an assessment of, you know, how severe or the extent of the injury. And then I'll go in, the nurse has taken down the dressing. I will go in and look, I'm looking to see how many joints the burn is crossing. What surface is it on? Is it on the dorsal hand or the volar hand? Is it on both? And all of that time, I'm kind of already making an action plan of the stretches that I want to give them. If they are going to need a splint, if this is a, you know, a deeper hand burn, am I concerned if it's like a deeper dorsal hand burn, am I concerned about the extensor mechanisms and structures on the back of the hand, which would change my treatment plan? Because if it's a deep dorsal hand burn, you don't want to do aggressive passive range of motion because you can rupture the extensor mechanisms. And then is this a hand that I anticipate will need grafting? Are they somebody that will they be able to tolerate compression at this stage of healing? A lot of times we'll put patients in isotoner gloves initially, but they have to be able to tolerate the friction of a glove going on. So I'm kind of looking to see how that wound looks and what, based on my experience, is this something that I could start initiating or do we need to wait a little bit? And then also kind of thinking into the future of, would this patient be a candidate for a custom compression garment? And so then I move into my actual, like, so then I will assess their range of motion. I take goniometric measurements. I do, you know, circumferential measurements for edema. And then my interview of the patient, what do they do for a living? What is their motivating factors? How can I engage this patient into using their hand? And how can I sell them on that they need to do this? And then again, you know, I may initiate some sort of a compensatory strategy initially, but really trying to move the patient away from any adaptation initially.
What strikes me so much is, like, I read that list in the article of the treatments they were providing, like stretching, compression, and it sounds, in some ways, it sounds so general, but the really specific considerations that you have to have when working with burns and what you've had to learn to be able to do all those seemingly simple things safely. Yeah, it's just very striking to me and speaks to the expertise, I think, of a burn therapist for sure. I was curious in your work, like in reference to the article, are there assessments or treatments that you're using that weren't mentioned in the literature?
Yeah. So, and as far as assessments, I think, you know, unfortunately, there's not a lot of great outcome measures and assessment tools, burn specific, like functional hand measurements and outcomes. So a lot of the research has been, you know, it's on other traumas, not necessarily hands. So I'm not going to take a dynamometer grip strength on a raw open wound. Like the patient's not going to be able to grip it. I know it's going to be impaired. And it's not. So there's things that are challenging. You know, I tend to not take grip assessments until much later in their recovery when they've, you know, achieved wound healing. And then there's some really interesting research and changes in practice right now in the burn community around revised range of motion measurements, which kind of take into account what are called cutaneous functional units. And what that is that the skin recruitment around joints is greater. So you can have a burn that comes close to a joint and it's going to recruit more skin and shrink more, and your range of motion may have impact joints you know, on either side. So looking at like revised range of motion measurements is something that I think we're trying to incorporate into our practice, but there's still a lot more research that needs to be done for that and standardization and acceptance within the burn community. And then I think other assessment tools, scar assessment tools that we use, the Modified Vancouver Scar Scale is something that we use, but again, more research needs to be done on that. There's other scar assessment tools that are out there. And then as far as treatments, other areas, I think my treatments, a huge emphasis is on education. And like that's 90% of my treatment is educating the patient. And then other modalities that we use, like I use paraffin a lot in the later stages of scar. And then also manual therapy for scar remolding, use of silicone products, as well as sometimes in cases we'll do like casting. Those are kind of other things. But I think in relation to this article, because it was in such the earlier stage of recovery, the use of silicone, the use of scar massage and paraffin wouldn't likely be indicated in those early phases.
Jodi, as I hear about your work, I'm so impressed by your specialty knowledge, and I'm really curious how you've acquired all this knowledge. Where do you go to learn about burns? I'll be honest, as I was doing like an internet search of like OT and burns, there's not an obvious like avenue or pathway. So I'd be curious to hear your experience there. And I think speaking to therapists who are early in this stage, like where do they go to learn more about therapy for burns?
Yeah, that's a great question. And not an easy, the easy answer is become a member of the American Burn Association, because that is truly where the wealth of resources are. But I understand it's also expensive. And so if you're new and you're not wanting to necessarily make that huge investment, but truly the American Burn Association has incredible resources. There's special interest groups. So I'm a part of the OTPT-SIG, where we share ideas off of each other and network. Every year there's an annual conference that is mind-blowing and so much information. And so it's sometimes overwhelming, but also just an incredible place to learn and kind of get the what's up to date and current practices in burn care. There's also the Journal of Burn Care, which is a great journal. And I think networking is, if you have access to anybody, if you know anybody who works in a burn center and reaching out, I think most therapists are really open to sharing and are like passionate about the work that they do and want to impart that information on others. So if you are interested in learning more about burns, I would reach out and see if there's opportunities to, if you have a question. I think all of us as burn providers want the best for patients. And so if a burn patient comes across your path and you're at a loss of what to do, try and find a verified burn center in your area and send an email and ask
questions. Yeah.
I wish I knew. I mean, I don't know of any other, there may be platforms on social media that I don't know about, but there's an area for this, Sarah. And the work that you're doing right now is also part of that, right? Is that you're...
I was like, oh, Jodi should lead us.
I mean, I'm happy to. If people have questions, I'm more than happy to... They can reach out to me. You can put my information on your site. I can connect them to people that I may know in their area.
Yeah. Even from reading the articles I read about burn rehab, I was like, this is a special group of people. You can feel all the heart and all the science there. And it really stood out to me among the practice areas. You could just really feel that. So I can see what you're saying. If you reach out to people, I can see these burn therapists being eager to share. And I can just imagine the dynamic nature of the burn conference, like you alluded to.
Yeah, but you have to be prepared. Sorry, when you do that, you have to be prepared that you're going to get different answers, right? Because there's different ways to do things and different therapists have different, because there still isn't standardization. So, but yes.
Yeah. And that kind of segues into my last big question, which is, in the next 5 years, where do you see burn therapy going? What are the challenges? What are the opportunities?
So I think our current state in this kind of mid post pandemic, hopefully we're post pandemic. There's so much burnout right now. We are just, I think, as a whole, like the hospital systems as a whole are really taxed. I know that's the case in my region. We've lost a lot of our core staff. And so, you know, as far as not our therapy staff has been pretty stable, but our nursing staff has really taken a huge hit. And so with that, we don't have our core nurses who know wound care, and that kind of trickles down and impacts the other team players. And so, and then you have new graduates coming into medicine that had a very different experience in their training because of the pandemic. And so I think there's going to be a lot of challenges around that. I think we're going to have to kind of, there needs to be a different way that we address education for providers coming in, because I think they didn't have the exposures. They weren't granted the same fortunes that you and I had going to school and getting our hands-on experience. And those really shape and form your kind of foundational knowledge. So I think those are some challenges. I think other challenges is that patients are surviving bigger and bigger burns. And so because we have the technology and ability to save people, that puts a huge burden on the care of these survivors for the long run. And that, you know, having patients in our hospitals for a year plus is just, that's a lot. And then, yeah, I think those are some of like the big challenges. Aside from what has always been a challenge is for us in the burn community to do more research, right? And to come to consensus and to have more standardizations in our tools and our practices, I think is a big challenge. And I think with that comes opportunities, right? So, I mean, research, getting more involved. I think with our advancements in technology and also utilizing that from how we interact with it and use it. So things like virtual reality and making more immersive and interesting experiences for patients could be, you know, one avenue. The use of 3D printing, I think, and there's centers that have been using 3D printing and doing really fun and interesting things with it. But I think we can, you know, is there ways to use scanners to be able to, you know, make, people are doing this actually now too, scanning and then fabricating custom face masks and or splints. And so reducing these super labor intensive practices to reduce that, the time that it takes to do that. And then I saw something recently. My sister actually sent me something from TikTok of all places, I don't follow TikTok. I'm not on it, but there was this really interesting compression garment that changes color based on how much pressure or how much tension is on the fabric. So you can really get, you know, in burn, so you want to have between 25 and 30 millimeters of mercury of compression when you're putting a patient in that. And it's really hard to gauge that. You know, we take these custom measurements, but like, how do you measure it? And I saw this really awesome fabric that changes color with, so you know that you're reaching the right tension when that fabric is green, or, and it was a really cool iridescent. So I just interesting, fun technologies that can kind of impact and improve our care. And then I think another kind of area is just within our like medical records, like use of technology and medical records and how we capture the like total burn surface area in a more three-dimensional model would be really ideal. Right now it's kind of a flat burn man, and being able to look at using technology for that to, I think if we can, you know, see it in a different way, you can kind of help predict scar contracture development, anticipate length of stay based on that model, and can maybe even help with like reimbursement of care and guide the therapy needs, which is a simple tool.
Yeah, that's such a horizon to look out over with these big challenges and these big opportunities. And I think I hear that and I'm just like, as people are listening to this, I hope that some of our therapists with the biggest hearts and the brightest minds are drawn to this area, because it's so important and the global need is huge and there's so much potential for OTs to help. Yeah, it's been such an honor just hearing about your work today. I can't believe it, we're at our rapid fire questions already. Are you up for a couple final questions?
Absolutely.
How do you usually describe occupational therapy?
So I've actually gotten away from this in recent years because I've being a burn therapist. I'm a burn therapist. But I actually, in this, in doing this, I've actually recognized that I'm doing our profession a really big disservice. And I think I need to go back to that of like really describing, because I truly identify as an occupational therapist. And so I think I need to go back to that. But in my prior, when I was in the acute care service, I would explain to people that my job is to get them back to being functionally independent. And as, you know, whatever that means for them. And so that I look at kind of their function and I can look at a task and look at what they're bringing, you know, physically, cognitively, and I can help them to be able to navigate the world so that they can be independent is the way that I try to describe what an OT does.
Yep. Yeah. And you're still doing that quintessential OT work in your burn therapy, which is awesome. What's one moment you've had in therapy that you'll never forget?
There's so many, Sarah. I've had so many incredible patients that I think working in burns has really touched me to look at the human spirit of what people can endure and what they can overcome. And I have a patient who I'm friends with today who, when he came into the hospital, large burn, intubated, deep hand burns, deep face, but he was intubated but still he was alert and following commands. And we're talking to him and his family about kind of what this is going to look like and that, you know, starting range of motion and he's gesturing and he's wanting to communicate. And so I built up a Sharpie and handed it to him to write, to communicate. And he wrote, "I will work hard every day." And I still have I have this piece of paper framed in my office and I look at it regularly. And he did. He worked really hard every day. And he's done some really incredible things in his life. And I recently watched him. He's an EMT and I actually watched him in action as a first responder in a way. And just seeing this person kind of go through kind of everything that he went through and then his like now giving back as a first responder is just amazing. And so I think just having patients like that and being able to see them through their whole journey is really, really special. And I hold those dear, near and dear.
Mm-hmm. I'm totally a crier and that brings tears to my eyes for sure to hear that story. I also wanted to know what's something you've read recently that's inspired you as an OT?
Yeah. So I've been talking about burnout and resiliency is a really big theme right now for us. And I was introduced to The Trauma Stewardship, which is by Laura Vandernoot Lipsky. And it's on that website is really incredible. There's some great resources, but there's a book, The Trauma Stewardship, which is an everyday guide to caring for self while caring for others. And it is on order. I have not yet read it, but just that so that's kind of been, I think it's really important that we as healthcare providers, especially right now, are learning how to take care of ourselves. And I think that's also something that's quintessentially OT in a lot of ways. And so being able to take care of myself so I can show up and be present for my patients is really important. And I think I can impart lots of this on to, I think the skills and things that you're learning that I will learn in that will help impart onto the patients as well.
Yeah. I have so many takeaways from this episode that I know I'll be thinking about, but I was wondering for you, what's the one final closing thought or takeaway that you wanted to share with people?
Yes. First, the burns aren't scary, or they're not as scary as they may seem. And that you or one as an occupational therapist actually has more tools than you may think you have. And kind of going back to our roots, and I don't really think about the practice framework like as I'm treating patients, but it really is there. If I were to kind of step away and look at the ways in which that I treat patients, it's foundational in our practice framework. And so I think that to recognize that you have these foundational tools in your toolbox that are going to help serve your patients in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Wow, Jody, you are doing incredible work and important work, and I'm so thankful for you taking the time to share with us today and just for the work that you do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Sarah, and thank you for the work that you're doing, because I just think that this is a really incredible gift to not just new grads, but just people in general. And I know for myself, like, your podcast has a wealth of information for people out there. So thank you.
Wow, you all, I was so moved by this conversation. I know you could just hear all the heart and the science that goes into Jody's work as a burn therapist. And I already know that I'm going to be thinking back on this episode as just a great example of what it looks like when we as OTs get to use that full scientific part of our brain and then combine that with our big hearts. This is just such a great example of that. I did want to really encourage you to check out the episode page. I'll link to some of the resources that we talked about, and I'll also link to assessments. Honestly, it seems like there are not enough burn-specific assessments, but I'll share the general ones like the DASH, but also link to some of the ones from our secondary reading, like the burn-specific scale, which doesn't seem to be widely used, but it is out there and exists for you. I also wanted to plug our OT Potential directory. On the directory, OT Potential members have a chance to tag their clinical interests, and there are OTs that have tagged burns as one of their interests and wound cares. I think I'm hearing this need for OTs with this interest to keep connecting to each other, so I hope you check that out as well. And like I said at the beginning, if you are a member of the OT Potential Club, you can log in to earn a certificate. We also have places for you to discuss this research and to share your thoughts on this discussion. I really think that's where the magic happens, is where we get to interact with each other and kind of process what we're learning. So if you are not yet a member, I definitely encourage you to sign up. And as always, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. I hope this podcast helps you broaden your knowledge, tweak your practice, and stay evidence-based. Take care, and we'll talk to you next time.